Stop playing Rotendo. We're back, yo!
Hi, my name is Rotendo Nyamuda, and welcome back! Welcome back to another exciting, phenomenal, next-level episode of In My 20s! Now, I know October was all like, is anyone there? Am I alone in the world? Where is in my 20s? And I do apologize because we were not here. The only explanation I can give you guys is what had happened, what was with the thing that had happened was the very thing that could not allow us to communicate and convey and put out a podcast episode. That's the only excuse I have. That's the only justification reason I have. But we are back and I'm so excited to be back. So let's pick up right off where we left off. Today's episode is all about visual identity. What is your style? What is the way you dress say about you when you leave the house in public? What are people thinking? And today's phenomenal guest is going to shed some light on the concept of visual identity. Without further delay, here she is.
Okay, I'm Tracy Shea King. I am a content specialist, I would say. I work for one of the leading magazines in South Africa, but I work in an online capacity. I've also previously had my own online magazine. I've done radio before. That is pretty much me.
Now, in every episode, you guys know that my guests always come through with the dip it low, pick it up slow, mind moment, gem moment of a quote. And this is just one of them.
We created this Instagram and Facebook and, you know, double tap culture.
Yes.
Because the minute you meet someone, you're not asking for their business card, you're asking for their handle.
The In My 20s podcast is split up into three sections. In the first section, we get to hear a little bit about Tracy's career journey and how she got to where she is today. In the second section, we dive into today's topic, which is all about visual identity and really unpacking what your clothes say about you. And rounding up all three sections is what this podcast is really about. It's conversations about what it's like to be in your 20s and some advice for those who are listening. So let's get straight into it. All right, so Tracy, talk us through your career journey.
Okay.
Some of your varsity experience, what you studied up until now.
Okay. So I went to varsity, actually. I got into Michaelis, which is one of, like, the best art schools in the continent, I believe. Well, at least that's what they told us. but no, seriously, it is one of the best art schools. And, yeah, so once you get there, you're told you've been chosen out of thousands of people. You're, you know, I guess 45 or 50 we were at the time.
Okay.
And that was pretty much like being on Project Runway. Every day.
Oh, wow.
It's like super intense.
Okay.
You're working with some of the best artists in the world. And just like it was such a great education in terms of receiving critique and really tapping into, because at that particular school, they don't really teach, they expect you. Once they've picked you, they've chosen you as someone who has a very strong point of view. So that was really like such a lesson in terms of, you know, looking at yourself as, okay, so I'm expected to kind of produce now. I'm not learning. I am a commodity coming into it.
Oh, wow.
Which for me was like really such a uncomfortable time, and because I didn't look at myself, I was super insecure.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I dropped out at the end of the first year.
Okay.
And then I went on to...
Were you insecure, out of interest, were you insecure about the creative part and kind of being on this pedestal where you didn't really see yourself in that way, or... What was your insecurities around?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think also growing up, my parents, so I like my sister and I love to say, like, the generation, my parents' generation, they're very much apartheid struggle, like, minded in terms of like that was their main focus. So like in terms of like being nurturing and things like that, we never really had any of that. And I've seen a lot in terms of friends and other people whose parents are the same age. It's they're basically, their main focus was, you know, let's get out of the struggle kind of thing. And like, you know, child rearing and all of that is kind of like a secondary.
Yeah, so a lot of tough love.
Yeah, so I didn't necessarily get, not so much tough love, but affirmed in, you know, I'd win awards for art and things like that, but not exactly like, you know, affirmed, like, yay, you're doing so great, or all of that kind of thing. It was more in terms of like, you know, you're supposed to get good grades, you're supposed to do well, that kind of thing.
It's expected.
Yeah.
Don't, you know,
we
don't.
We fought so hard for you to even get into school. Yes. We fought so hard to live in this like amazing neighborhood for you to go to the best schools. Yeah. Like, you need to be grateful.
You need to show up, right? And I think, and I think, I don't know if it's like parents in general or our generation, but I constantly hear the story, or my parents would used to say when we were growing up, you have to know that we walked X amount of kilometers barefoot to school to study. So you need to pass, and not just pass, but you need to be like number one.
Exactly. And so, yeah, that's where a lot of my insecurities came from, because it's all of a sudden like, you're good enough, you've made it, so now just do what you're supposed to do. And I definitely choked under that.
Okay.
I was just like, you know, stage fright.
Okay.
Like, whoa, okay, what am I supposed to do now? Anyway, from then on, I transferred to do a Bachelor of Arts. So moved from a Bachelor of Fine Arts to Bachelor of Arts, and stuck with art history because I love art.
Okay.
And then did media and writing, and then also did film. So actually, while I was at UCT, I did quite a few internships.
Okay.
So I wasn't sure whether I wanted to be in the art world or whether I wanted to do media.
Okay.
So I think in my second year, I started exploring internships.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the first internships was with a auction company. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I actually got an opportunity to intern at Marie Claire, South Africa.
Nice.
And that was such a confidence boost because, they constantly were saying, wow, you're like so super great. And like they would let me write a lot of stuff, which I'm assuming the other interns didn't do.
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah, I got quite a bit of my writing published there. Mm. And that was really bittersweet. It was affirming, but it was also frustrating.
Yeah.
Because I think in my mind, and most people that I meet now say, you know, oh, you're working in the magazine industry. Because I get emails constantly from like younger people saying, can I come and shadow? And they've got this kind of glamorous idea of it. And so did I.
Yeah.
And when I was at Marie Claire, I was super shocked because at the time, I think there was a reality show called Running in Heels. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes, yes.
And so in your mind, and I think that was the time of like the September issue. And
yes,
kind of
yes. Anna went to a September issue and loved it. Like, that's what it is. Yeah. The Devil Wears Prada.
Yes. So in your mind, you're thinking, okay, people are snatched, they're turned out, they've got looks for days, you know, they're serving you
this
looks.
This is what it is.
Yeah.
Every day. Like, you imagine that, you know that scene in Devil Wears Prada where it's like, I think in like the span of 30 seconds, she changes so many outfits, it's like a transition, and I'm like, that's me.
So I, obviously, a lover of fashion and style and all of those things, and a lover of things. Yeah, you know, I went in there just, like, thinking, you know, I'm going to meet like-minded people.
Yeah.
Great people, but only to find out that people didn't actually live the lifestyle that they were writing about. Now, so I work under a big publication, I'm not going to say the name, that houses three internationally recognized publications. So we're the African component or African edition of those international brands.
So Tracy, chat to us a little bit about visual identity. It's something that you brought up in conversations that we've had before, but what exactly is it?
Okay. So it's something that I've been interested in and been thinking about over, let's say, the past 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this blog called, it's still alive, but I haven't really contributed to it in a while.
Yeah.
Called The Style Trunk, mm-hmm. where basically I would provide style advice to millennial women.
Nice.
And branching off from that, I had a segment on a radio station and a segment on TV where I would talk about style and talk people through style.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, and now working obviously back in the publishing industry,
mm-hmm.
I've just seen that your visual identity plays such a huge role in terms of giving you access or not allowing you access
okay.
in certain things. There's Instagram and there's all the social media.
Okay.
I've just found that your visual identity is so important because we're constantly judging on face value.
Wow.
And how do you model or create an identity that actually tells the story of what you do before you even say a word?
Wow, that's so powerful. And I read something that said before people actually pay attention to what you're saying, they're judging you by what you're wearing, and that will determine the amount of respect but subconsciously that they give you, because based on, oh, if she looks like that, she must be this kind of person. Mm. So there's already a judgment based on when you walk in the room.
Yeah. And most people would think, oh, that only applies to, you know, creative fields, things like that. But think about Mark Zuckerberg. Mm. Think about Steve Jobs. They both have such a specific and unique visual identity.
Yes.
If you see a polo neck and, you know, jeans or chinos,
mm-hmm.
and you're in San Francisco
mm-hmm.
or the Valley,
mm-hmm.
Silicon Valley,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be like, this guy's in tech.
Yes,
because
Steve Jobs,
has
yes.
created that uniform.
Mm.
If you're seeing someone in a hoodie and, you know, jeans and white sneakers, you're thinking, okay, cool, this person has to be in, like, some sort of techie
yes.
thing.
Okay.
You're thinking, you know, Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, or, like, you know, there's a uniform to certain things.
Yes.
And
that's
so
interesting, because obviously in primary school and high school, our visual identity was based on the uniform that we wore. And now, it's not a uniform, but it's, like, a certain kind of look. As you've mentioned, corporate.
Mm.
Corporate is very much, it's your suit. It's women in pencil skirts.
Yeah.
Heels, definitely heels. Mm. Like, what are you doing wearing pumps or flats or even slops with socks in a corporate environment? You don't do that. Managers, you know, they always have makeup.
Yeah.
No, if there's no makeup, don't come to work. But also visual identities in terms of cities.
Mm.
So Cape Town is very relaxed, very much wear whatever you feel, how do you feel today.
Mm.
I'm not saying people rock up in their pajamas, but they might as well have, based on some of the things I've seen. But Joburg is always very refined. As a woman, your nails are done, your hair is done, you have the latest handbag and, you know, that little, you know, Versace on the side.
Yeah.
Whereas like Durban and PE, again, very chilled beach, you know. But that's fascinating for me. But here's an interesting question then. Should we be conforming to the visual identities of the industries that we're in?
Well, if you want to make bank in that industry, I think you do.
Mm.
So if, you know what I mean, money's on the line.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And even for me, let's say in a modeling context,
mm-hmm.
like, when I was in varsity and I would go to casting, I was out of touch with, you know, what does a model wear to a casting.
Uh-huh.
So I would wear just whatever I feel like, which is great. What I wore was very, you know, fashionable. But for that industry,
mm-hmm.
they're looking for a blank canvas when you're in the casting.
Okay.
They decide what fashion you wear. So if you're going there doing the most in this, you know, fashionable, slayage, you know, whatever, the chances are you're not going to get booked for the job.
Because they're not looking for you, they're looking for the character that in their mind they've already placed in this.
Yes,
job.
And it's great for you to be that character in your portfolio and all of that.
Mm.
But when you're going to a casting situation, they're looking for your skin, your hair, more of your personality. Is that going to shine through? So you'll find a lot of models. And going to castings now, I get way more respect because it's, you know, you come there, you must be in a black jeans and probably a black top or white t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
The most amount of, like, you know, overcoats or whatever that you can wear is like a leather jacket or maybe a denim jacket and then a good boot.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So my thing is, to really align yourself with very like the specific thing that you're doing, but also it's going to open the door for you to show yourself.
Okay.
Because you don't want people to shut the door on you before.
Yes. So you need to get a seat in the table. So you need to get a seat at the table first before you can change.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to change in that industry.
And I think because it's such an Instagram industry, let me not even say one industry, it's an Instagram age. You have doctors now on Instagram getting their clients through Instagram.
Yes.
Dr. Smile, younger. There's a doctor.
I go to Dr. Smile. There was that doctor who did the Kiki challenge as well overseas. And and he got so many more appointments just based on doing the challenge.
Dr. Orion, which is Kim Kardashian's doctor, the plastic surgeon.
Okay.
And Dr. Oren's a great example because unlike, let's say, a Dr. Smile, you see him in his coat, or even Dr. Pimple Popper.
<who's>
She's in her doctor medical uniform because she's got a more serious tone because that's her, you know, that's her bread and butter. Whereas Dr. Smile, Lex Leo, he's involved in music, or younger, they're both involved in music and other aspects. But then they're attracting a certain clientele.
Okay.
So they are in the pocket. Their visual identity is in the pocket of the clientele that they're attracting. So Dr. Smile, you'll see tons of South African celebrities, celebrities from Nigeria will go to him to get their teeth done. Because
all
they're
the way.
Like,
they'll
you
come
know
all
what?
The way.
I can, yeah, you've seen WizKid there, Davido, people like that are in Dr. Smile's chair because it's all about that connection. This guy gets it. You know, he's got this hip-hop, you know, identity.
Swag.
He's got the cap turned to the side. You know, the, I can relate.
And I like
so
that.
He's actually started producing girls, which are those goals.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So really, it is about, you know, telling a story and not, you know, making sure that people give you room to kind of show who you are.
I like that. So what are the steps that people can follow to get the correct visual identity for the industry that they're in? Whether you are in corporate, whether you're in media, whether you're in a medical field, a science field, a engineering field, whatever your field is, how do you get that correctly?
For me, the key to mastering anything is self-awareness, which for some may take longer than others. But once you're aware of yourself, or even aware of you know, the outcome that you want, and this doesn't have to be, you know, like a 5-year outcome. It could literally be, okay, in the next 6 months, I'm gonna be here. And it's that old adage of, you know, in the past they used to say power dressing, or they used to say dress for the job that, you know, you want, not the job that you have. Unfortunately, we as millennials and Gen Zs are the problem. We've created this Instagram and Facebook and, you know, double tap culture. And that's why it's more, a visual identity is more important now than it ever was. Because the minute you meet someone, you're not asking for their business card, you're asking for their handle.
Yes.
So we're kind of, and we're doing that in life. We're double tapping in life.
Oh, wow. That is a mind moment. I have these mind moments in the show, but it's so true. You walk down the street and you won't even know someone, and in your mind, you judge them. Or you're sitting in a social setting and you're double tapping, or you're swiping right, swiping left in your mind, going, based on what you look like, I haven't spoken to you. I know nothing about you, but based on what you look like, I will either want to approach you or want you to approach me, or not today, or not ever.
Yeah.
I love that double tap culture. That is a whole hashtag in itself. That's a whole segment in itself.
Yeah.
But also I think there's an importance of reading, because step one is the visual identity. Step one is getting in the room. Step two, what are you saying?
Yeah.
What is in your mind? Because when you start speaking and rubbish is coming out, people switch off.
Exactly. But I think I love that, because a lot of people in this Instagram age have clocked into double tap culture mm-hmm. and used it as leverage to get themselves in the room mm-hmm. and get themselves at places. And it's only once you, and they've gotten millions of followers because we're so in tune to visuals.
Yes.
And you get into the room with them, you ask them to do something, you ask them to do an Instagram takeover, you ask them to write a piece,
mm-hmm.
and there's just zero skills.
Nothing. Or you've already paid them half, yeah. and you're just like, but I thought you were based on the visual. That's where people get lost. It's a trap.
Yeah.
Visual identity is powerful if you are the person who is commanding the visual identity.
Yeah.
But if you're the person who needs to make the decision based on someone's visual identity alone, mm-hmm. it's a trap.
Yeah. But also, you can get very, very far just based on your visual
identity. Dating. Dating. The dating industry now. It's all double tap visual identity.
Yeah.
She looks good. He looks good.
Mm.
And then what happens when you get to the dinner table? What happens when you're in the boardroom?
Mm.
What happens when now you need to go and give a speech based on what your Instagram is saying about you?
But now, if you've already... So in a lot of cases that I see a mm-hmm. lot every day, you know, you've already gotten the job, you've already been paid
mm.
based on your visual identity. They mm. can't fire you.
Yo! What is it, 2 months?
Yeah.
No, but there has to be so many strikes against your name before they can fire you.
They can't fire you.
Yeah.
You've already secured the bag. So what I'm saying to people that do have the talent, that mm-hmm. do have the skills, mm-hmm. literally focus on, like, really put effort into that, because you've got the skills, you've got the mind, you've got the, you know, you can talk your way through a room and all of that.
Mm.
But really, actually pay that attention, because the number of people, and you see it, all of our social media stars,
mm.
they've built businesses off their visual identity. Mm. I promise you, when you meet these people,
mm-hmm.
there's literally nothing going on mm. in their brains, and it takes them really far. Yes, in some cases, or there's a time limit on it. But really, it's a good time limit
mm.
because, you know, let's say you've just booked a deal.
Yeah.
I've already booked you. You've signed the contract.
Yes.
You've got the money.
You're one up. I think that's
good.
I think the visual identity thing as well comes down to, you're always looking for that thing that makes you different.
Mm.
If you are competing for mm. a position or a job with someone else,
mm.
Your everything is the same.
Mm.
Your grades were the same. Your schooling was the same. Your, I don't know, everything about you is the same. You guys probably sound the same. You listen to the same music. There is nothing that separates the two of you. You're identical in every single way possible when it comes to your career. The difference between them getting the job or you getting the job could be your visual mm. identity. And I do think it's important. I completely agree with you.
Yeah, mm. and I'm finding that a lot of the time it is
mm.
because our CVs are no longer on paper. Mm. They're online, and online there are photos.
Hey. And there are photos that you did not ask to be tagged on.
Wow. And so even to, yeah, your employer,
mm.
you know, even if they've never seen you, they're going to see you
mm.
on the internet.
And they may or may not double tap.
They may or not double tap, yeah.
So the entire, I guess, the reason the podcast was started
mm-hmm.
was because of wanting to chat to people through their 20s and 30s, mainly through their 20s and what their experiences has been.
Mm-hmm.
So reflecting on your 20s, how has your 20s been as an overview into your life as a 20-something-year-old?
Awesome. So now I'm in my late 20s, about to enter 30s, I think next year, yeah. and, wow, it has been literally extreme highs and extreme lows.
Mm, okay.
A lot of things went down once I hit, you know, 25, 26
mm.
in terms of... family things. My parents got divorced.
Mm-hmm.
I started looking at my parents as people,
mm.
which happens.
Yes.
They are human. Yeah. And then realizing, oh my gosh, you guys have made terrible choices. You made terrible life choices.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Actually, And then finding myself for a section of my 20s, just like really in a slump, really like at one stage, like unemployed. And that was such a journey, where I was literally like super depressed.
How long were you unemployed for?
It was like a year and a half. During that time, I was doing some entrepreneurial things, but like that was a real blow. Obviously, coming from like one of the best schools, and then you've got your own business, and then you've moved to LA, and then you've come home, and you're just like, whoa, crash. But I think the big lesson that I've learned in my 20s is that there are no shortcuts, and also it's never too late. Life is long, especially for this generation. And I think a lot of the problems that we're facing is because life is long. I think we've got more access, or the as a society, people are taking better care of themselves. So like in the corporate world, a lot of people that I've spoken to will say, you know what, I'm like supposed to be promoted. My parents got promoted at this age, but because people are living longer, that, you know, our parents are still working. They're still holding down those jobs. And so you as a young one coming up, you can't kind of take up those jobs at the age that they necessarily took up those jobs, because they're still there.
They're still very much there. And for a lot of them, that's all they've known. And I think the other thing about, so longer in two aspects, is I think life is long as, in the sense that because we are a social media generation and instant gratification, we do want things now. If I post a picture today, I want my tens of thousands of likes tomorrow. I don't want to build to it, forgetting that as long as life is there's that time. You have to build your career. You don't start off as an intern and in 3 years you're the CEO of that company. That doesn't make sense. But as you're saying, long in the sense that the older generations are still in those positions, also knowing that for most of them, they've only had one kind of job, or they've only been in one kind of industry. We are a generation that has chopped and changed. We studied one thing, we had a side job, we went into our side job, then we studied something else, then we did our honors and our masters and our MBAs, and now we've gone from being a media student to a medical doctor.
And it happens.
It happens. So, yeah, that's very interesting.
So a lot of my 20s has been a huge spiritual journey. In terms of, I've definitely matured in my faith, and just it has brought a lot of self-awareness to me, which I'm so grateful for, because a lot of the time people get to certain places, let's say in their career or their personal brands, and then they actually have missed out on, you know, who they are. And really understanding where they start and where they begin. And so I'm super grateful for that, you know, downtime in a sense. And going from extreme high to extreme low and realizing what the core of my essence is. That even if I'm like super rich or like super poor, there's certain parts of me that I've now seen that stays the same. That's like, you know, the core of me. So it's been really, for me, my 20s have been just like a remarkable time, and I'm so ready to go into my 30s and flourish, knowing exactly who I am, knowing what I stand for, knowing what's gonna rock the boat or not rock the boat, which I think a lot of people miss out on.
And then Tracy, advice. You have given me so much advice in our years of being friends and knowing you. There's so many conversations that we've had where I, and this is the whole thing of the podcast, is I feel like I get some of my greatest wisdom and mind moments from my friends. And this is just amplifying it to let, you know, three or four other people hear some. What advice do you have people who are currently in their 20s? They're going through an aspect of their life where they're just questioning things. They're questioning life, love, what step to take, how to proceed in life. Based on your life experiences, what advice would you give to your average 20-something-year-old person?
Okay. The thing that comes to mind is slow down. It's going to be okay. I think we get into the habit of, you know, let's move, fast pace. But actually slow down and be quiet. You cannot navigate or go through something important or succeed without actually going within, without actually assessing from stillness, mm-hmm. and fight for that stillness,
mm-hmm.
whether it's, you know, literally switching off your phone for mm-hmm. an hour a day or switching off your phone for a day.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's switching off your phone or deciding to separate from a friendship, fight for that stillness and mm-hmm. peace of mind mm-hmm. and peace.
Sure.
Because that you're not going to rise from chaos.
Mm.
You're just not.
Yeah.
So fight for peace. That is what inner peace, that's where I would say is kind of the best starting point. Take what little pockets, or create a pocket of peace. Make time for yourself or take back, you know, your peace. It's as simple as, you know what, I'm going to wake up at 5 when the house is quiet and I am going to journal, or I'm going to meditate, or I'm going to visualize. And those little things, that's going to put you on the path of success, because you come into this world alone and you need to master yourself, because you're your greatest tool, really. So you're coming to, you know, this world alone, and you are your greatest investment. You are your greatest tool, your greatest resource. If you're not taking care of that and tapping into that, then your success is, there's a cap on your success or your growth.
Wow. You are your greatest resource. You are your greatest tool. You need to learn how to master yourself. I am all the wowed out. Thank you so much, Tracy, for coming on today's episode and shedding some light, not only on your life journey and on your thoughts and opinions on the quarter life crisis and being in your 20s, but also coming back to today's topic, which is all about visual identity. I think a lot of the time we step out of the house and we don't fully understand how much what we're wearing says about us without us even saying anything, i.e. you're going into an interview and the first thing people look at is they look at what you look like. You know, your portfolio and stuff is a backing for your work, but what do you look like on the weekend when you're chilling with your friends, when you're on Baywatch, when you're wine tasting with your people? What does your visual identity say about you? At the end of the day, sometimes just looking good and looking fresh does something for you. Now, I'm not saying I always look fresh, because there are times that I step into the mall and I'm like, today, no one will see me. I'm just going to get bread. I'm just going to get milk. I'm just going to get, you know, a packet of sweets on cheat day. I'm lying, it's usually a bottle of wine. But I'm like, no one's going to see me today. And it's that day, that everyone decides to see me. Hey, Retainer. I'm like, who's that? That's not me. It's not me. It's not me. And then I get into the car and I'm like, oh, okay. Not going to happen again. But anyway, that is so important. That visual identity is so important. Guys, I want to say thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Thank you so much for being present on the internets of the world to tune into the podcast. Please follow us on social media. We are on Instagram, we are on Facebook, we are on Twitter, and you can listen to your favorite podcast in my 20s on SoundCloud, on YouTube, and on iTunes. So go out and live your best lives and just be great. So we'll catch you same time, same place, right here on your favorite podcast in my 20s. In my 20s. How old are you? I am how old are you? I'm in my 20s. Now shimmer your shoulders. Back and forth. I'm in my 20s. Back and forth. I'm in my 20s. Back and forth. And 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5. Okay. Bye.